portions of the show may be previously recorded. Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, is Tell Del Tuesday, and we have another great guest with us. He's been on before multiple times, but his story warrants bringing it back. He's out of Georgetown, Texas, and he's had as many as 68 multifamily properties. I think he's got less than that now, sold some of them in the 50s now. And he's also been a lead investor on a couple of properties, and he also did six houses that he purchased, rehabbed, and sold, made massive profit on. So he's done a little bit of everything. He's been around. He retired in 2016 after getting started here, and he's got a great story that starts out with being right where you were, just like everybody else. Had a job, had a savings, had a 401k, but now he's retired and doing very, very well. Welcome to the show, Michael Johnson. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Dale. Thanks for having me. Thanks for great intro.
Well, Michael, it's remember, we've had you on five times now. This could be the sixth time. However, I want you to keep in mind that these are all new people. They've never heard you before.
Right.
And so we got to start at the beginning again and help them out with, hey, when you first heard about us, where were you? And what made you start thinking about doing something like this?
Start out, I guess, back in 2011. We just moved to Texas out from Oregon. I changed jobs. I was a software engineer. I went to school as a mechanical engineer, spent time, worked on the space station down in Alabama. Did that 401k thing, you know, 12%, the company match of another 4. So I was putting a lot of money into 401k with Boeing, and then moved to Hewlett Packard in Oregon, and then ended up here in Texas, maybe 2009, right after that housing crash. The house that we had out in Oregon, couldn't sell it, so we had to rent it because nobody was buying back then. Rented it for 2.5 years, finally sold it, took that cash, came here. Was looking for some place to invest it. Didn't want to do the stock market because I'd been through the 2000 crash and the 2008 crash. And I knew real estate was a place to go. I had, you know, read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad 4 or 5 times. They talk about creating a team. It's like, well, how do I get this team? Heard you on the radio. It's like, we've got the team for you. Like, oh, finally. So I went to your presentation, signed up, and the rest is history.
You know, from previous time when you did this presentation, you said something that was a lot more powerful than what you just ran right by. So I'm going to verify that my memory and our notes here are right. You made a blazing comment that back in 2000, you lost about half of what your savings were. And then in 2008, yep, you did it again, lost another about half of what you had. Is that true?
Yeah, I didn't learn the first time. So I had all my stuff in like technology stocks back in 2000, my 401k, and half of it got wiped out, right, in several months. And it took 8 years for it to come back. I think I had like 400,000 in my 401k in my mid 30s. I thought I was rocking and rolling. And half of it goes away. And then, you know, you're still contributing because that's what we're told to do. 2008, it's all back finally. And then it happens again. So yeah, very frustrating.
From 2008 to 2011, that's the conspicuous period of time we have to speak about here for everybody else, because they're all in that same boat. And by the way, the stock market's just going down again right now. I don't know how much. I don't follow it. But it's been hit pretty hard the last couple of weeks. So the question is, what were you thinking after 2008 to 2011? Why did it take to 2011 to make a move? Was the fact the job was all messed up too, and the double whammies, what made you take action?
Yeah, 2011, we finally sold that house in Oregon, and it was paid off. So I had a big chunk of money now that, you know, $300,000. It's like, well, now I need to invest it. I don't want to put it back in the stock market. What do I do with it? And I knew real estate was the place to go, but I had no one to help me. So that's when we found you, and we were able to, you know, find a place where we felt more comfortable. It wasn't the stock market related, you know, start investing in real estate with mentorship.
So help me out here a little bit. My notes are a little fuzzy because we've got you down for having like 68 properties. You sold down to around 50 some in those numbers along that, but down to 53. But I've saw another part here where they ask you how many A's, how many B's, how many C's, and it says 48, 49, 2, and 1, which is way more than that. So clarify that.
Yeah, those are percentages. So it's like 48%.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, C's and B's, and then I've got a few A's and two construction projects.
All right. So you've got the 53 passive deals right now plus the lead deals you're doing?
Right.
All right, we clarified that.
I've done one lead deal back in 2016. When I retired from my job, I kind of panicked. It's like, okay, now I don't have that guaranteed paycheck coming in every 2 weeks. So I became a lead investor. We bought a 64-unit property in Austin, ran that for 2.5 years, sold it, made a decent profit, and then decided, you know, that's a lot of work being a lead and a responsibility with other people's money. And I was doing pretty well passively because I was continuing to invest passively, and so, you know, I can make this work passively. And so that's what we've been doing. And our income has been growing every year. You know, we don't work anymore. We just invest and keep reinvesting, and that income just continues to climb with passive income. It's an amazing system we got.
So you take the money and like your first refi, in your notes here, it says that it was 150% return on the refi.
Yep, that's with Jerry, and it's a 360-unit property. It was back in the May of 2012, pretty run down. And he, in a year and a half, you know, he'd gone through and painted all the exteriors and was rehabbing the interiors, and that commanded a higher rent. And once he got a significant portion of that, we got up to 90% occupied from being in the 60% occupied range. The value of it went from $8 million at purchase to $22 million in 2 years.
Unbelievable.
We did a refinance, pulled out 150%. That property, we still own that property. It's now worth close to $60 million.
Every year we hold it.
Yeah, every year we hold this thing, it goes up another $4 million, you know, just appreciation and inflation. Our all in was only 3.7. So every year we hold it, we're with 110% return on our original investment. It's crazy.
That's unbelievable. You know, it's hard to believe, you know, when you think about that and you listen to that, people out there can't believe that. There's no way, Michael, they can believe that.
Yeah, you know, you buy right, you buy these things right, you get a distressed property, and you can do miracles with it.
I know he bought it right because I remember him telling me that it cash flowed at 70% occupied.
Yeah, it was crazy. 17 a door.
What's it worth a door now, just out of curiosity?
Oh, boy.
60 million divided by 30, that's got to be 200,000 a door.
Yeah, getting close.
Wow.
360 units, yeah. So maybe 160 a door. I don't know. I haven't done the math.
Yeah.
But that $80,000 investment in that is going to be worth $1 million next year. One investment, make you a millionaire.
Unbelievable.
It takes 10 years, right? It's not get rich quick, but
Pretty
dang good.
Fortunately for you, though, you didn't do just one. What year did you get started, by the way? Lifestyles.
My birthday, November 2011. So we did three passive deals in 2012. That's how we got started. And
what about the six houses?
Second deal. Yeah, we also did houses. We did three in San Antonio. So I'm up in the Austin area, Georgetown. Did three properties down there in San Antonio, and three of them up here. And we held them till about 2016 when my mentor said, hey, it might be time to get out. So we got out of all of them and put all that money into apartments.
You've become massively successful. So it's got to be difficult even to answer the beginner type questions that I used to, you know, that I normally ask people that I've asked you in the past. Like, what were you thinking when you went through the 2-day and what were the aha moments? I don't know if you can even remember that stuff that far back, can you?
Yeah, it's been a while. You know, as far as the fear, you know, the fear of that first several deals is, I think, something that a lot of people have trouble getting over. So, because up until that point, I'd been used to investing in stocks, you know, and it'd be a $5,000 investment here, $4,000 there. Never in my wildest dreams would I think of investing $100,000 into one asset. But now that's fairly commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just it's a different mindset. But you got to get over the fear of doing that. And the way you do that is you go to these networking events, you go to the expo, you meet these people, you understand how the system works, and that fear slowly goes away.
Well, I'm going to ask you to try to articulate something that may be very difficult to do, because I'm sure you haven't sat around and thought about it, and I don't know if I could even articulate it that well. But what is it now that you think about all this? I mean, now that you've mastered the actual nuts and bolts of it and you know it works when you do it right, now all you have to do is decide to yourself, how much of this do I want? How much am I willing to take action on? What is my master plan? Those kinds of things. What do you think about when it comes to the investment part of your life now?
So now you start thinking about legacy. And, you know, I've got two kids and I've got two grandkids. So now we've gone out and set up a family trust and we start kind of focusing on what's next. You know, we start looking, you know, what does it take to set up a foundation? And things like that. So you start to, you know, instead of looking inward, you start to look outward. You know, what's next for my family? What's next for my extended family? You know, sisters and her kids. You know, how can I start helping the people outside of my physical household?
That's an interesting point. So without putting you on the spot, because you may not have worked all this out even to yourself yet or within your own family yet, give us some ideas of the kinds of thought processes that swirl around when you start putting together a family trust, let alone, you know, put together some kind of a foundation or something.
Yeah, you start, you know, thinking about, especially the grandkids, you want to protect them. And they, you know, talking to the lawyer last year that helped set us up, he'll let us know, you know, if the worst happens and your one of our kids dies and like their spouse gets remarried and this new spouse now potentially has access to all your assets and could, you know, you want to protect your grandkids. So this new trust now sets up things and then puts things in place to where something like that isn't going to wipe out the legacy of our kids. So there's just all kinds of stuff like that the lawyer made us aware of that can happen out in the real world that you never think about if, you know, if you don't have assets to inherit. So,
yeah, that's so true, because most people really don't. I mean, no more than just the basic minimum that you can give your kids for free, you know, without any type of tax situation. So when you think about this, my biggest problem with it, challenge, better, probably a better word than problem, is who do you leave to operate all this stuff, right? Most of your stuff is passive. So you've got a family, what does Curtis call that?
A family office.
The family office. You got the family office thing going. Are you teaching your kids to run it? Does your wife know how to run it if you were to pass away? How does that all set up?
Yeah, so my son, I've got two. The younger son he was 17 when I first joined. We took some of his college fund. We invested it into a deal. It tripled in 2.5 years. So it woke him up. You know, he thought he was going to be a stock trader. And now he switched his major, and he's a commercial real estate master now out of Texas A&M. He works for a property tax protesting company for commercial, does a lot of apartment complexes for lifestyles now. And he and I bought an 8-unit. He's the lead on it. We got an 8-unit up there. 14 months. We did a cash out refi just last month. Got 60% of our money back, and he's looking for another property. So he's on track to become a lead fairly soon. And he'll take over all the assets, because my wife's like, you know, I don't know what deals we're in. I don't know what to do. I'm like, don't worry, you know, my son's going to take care of it. So he's definitely prepped. One thing we have started looking at is, you know, the average amount invested per deal. You know, I think deal number 70 closed yesterday. And when I look back at the 10 years, my average investment was like 67,000. You know, I got 50s, I got 100s. It's like I would never trust myself to go bigger than that. And now I realize that's too many deals to leave to your kids, because it's a lot of headache, you know, when the time comes. So I want to get into fewer deals with larger amounts. So that was the commitment I made this year.
Fewer deal with larger amount, which produces actually more risk, I would think, but less paperwork.
Yeah, more risk, less paperwork. But I figure I got to trust myself. I've done well with 70. I think I know what I'm doing now. So, yeah, it's going to be a little more risk, but I've got a good solid foundation and cash flow and all this stuff, so I can afford to take some extra risk.
Gotcha. So now, here's the next question people want to know. They may not even understand enough. Depends where they're at. But you get to the point, I'm setting this up for you. You get to the point where you're first trying to replace your earned income. That's right. The big goal. The next step then is you find that you've been living frugally because you wanted to get to that point where you could replace your earned income and support yourself. Then you get a big refi or a couple of refis or whatever, or you get some money out of the 401k that had been sitting there until you quit your job, and now you got some extra money, you buy some more stuff. Now you're making more money than you need to live on. Right. Now you make some decisions. The decision one could be, well, I'm going to up the standard of my living, quality of living, right? And number two could be, well, I've just gives me more money to put back and buy more stuff. So I chose the buy more stuff thing instead of upping my standard of living. And I did that by making stupid little decisions, like I never owned a house that cost me more than 1 year's worth of income. And right now, my house I'm living in right now cost me 1/4 of 1 year's worth of income. So I'm due to upgrade, I guess. but the point is that there was a position where most of the monies went back into buying more stuff. Hence, it keeps growing, like you said, making right. more money every year. So when we come back right. from the break, we're going to take a short break here. Let's talk about how you manage your growth and how you peel off some money for it's not the money, it's the lifestyle, and how you keep the other part reinvesting and growing that. I think that's a big thing for someone at your stage. We'll be right back.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
There is a dream killer here somewhere today. You're going to run into somebody that's going to tell you this stuff doesn't work. Like Vinette said, it's a scam. This is probably a multi-level marketing program. Somebody is going to tell you it doesn't work because you're the wrong race, the wrong age, the wrong sex, the wrong sexual preference, the something or other. That this is all set up so rich people can be successful and all you poor people can't. And if you believe that, they've won. But if you don't, you win.
Don't believe the dream killers. Start winning today with the Lifestyles Unlimited free workshop. Get the knowledge you need to replace your income in 2 to 5 years, and then find out how to take action. Register for the free online workshop at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. Today on Tell Del Tuesday, we have Michael Johnson out of Austin, Texas, actually Georgetown, which is outside of Austin, Texas. And he's been very, very successful over the last 11 years of being a member of Lifestyles Unlimited. Before we went to break, I asked him to think about his process of how he is going to continue to develop his portfolio and/slash take out a certain amount of monies to live that life, that quality lifestyle we talk about all the time. Because, you know, Michael, that's really what it comes down to at the point you're at now, the point I'm at now. It's, there's no more struggle. There's no more figuring it out. It's just simply, you know, rinse, wash, do it again. But you have to realize that you're only going to live so long, and somewhere along the way, you need to take some chips off the table. How do you see that?
So I, you know, those first 8 years, almost everything got reinvested. I think my mentor back then, you said, you know, take some off the table, like 15%. You know, you get a cash out refinance, spend a little bit of money on yourself, because just psychologically, that motivates you to keep doing it. Because if you reinvest everything and you don't take anything off the table and don't improve your life at all, that, you know, psychologically, I think that's a challenge to just keep doing that over and over again year after year. So spend a little bit as you go. And then now we're at a point where we've got more than we know what to do with. Yeah, so we built a house, bought an acre 2 years ago, and all during COVID, they were working on our new house. So I've got a brand new house up in Georgetown, and I put a wood shop right next to it. So now I've got a 1,000-square-foot wood shop that I spend my time in building things for us and for other people.
You know I'm a woodworker.
Are you?
Yeah, I have to tell you the story.
I also have a
giant train set, too. I have about $500,000 to $1 million. Well, actually, they're just the layout's $500,000, probably $1 million with a train set. But irrespective of that, woodworking. I've had the same woodworking tools, and I have everyone you can think of. Just go down the list. I've got that power tool, both hand power tools and big tools. And I have have you ever been to my house yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been there.
Okay, so you know my big giant garage, right? I've got this 20-car garage, so I've got all the room for all this stuff. And just happened this year, earlier, maybe the end of last year, I was buying my wife purses for Christmas, and each purse costs like $6,000 or something like that. And so I've looked at this, and I spent like $10,000, $20,000 maybe on Christmas presents, and I thought, what do I ever buy for me? I said, well, the only thing you like to do is woodworking. It's really everything I ever want. I have any gun I want, anything I want, I buy, right? So then I said, I'm going to go look at some brand new big power tools. And I went and looked at power tools. I'm just telling you the story because it's worth everybody to listen to. Is that I went out there and I found that there's two kinds of power tools. There's those that are the really nice hobbyist power tools. Then there's industrial power tools. And I found out that I could completely replace all of my bandsaw, my table saw, my joiner with stuff twice as wide. In other words, I've got a 6-inch joiner. I went to a 12-inch wide joiner. I went to an 24-inch wide planer. I went to a 24-inch wide sander. I got everything, you know, all these giant 5-horsepower, you need, you know, double amperage things to run them. And all that costs less than those purses. Can you believe that? All that together, commercial, industrial quality stuff costs less than those purses. And you know what I said to myself? I'm going to buy it. And I don't use it then. I don't need that stuff. But it was just that thing that, you know what? I'm going to do it. It is just sharing that with you as a story. Because when you really realize how much money is, that when you start making a lot of money, you start going like, man, the stuff that you used to struggle for is nothing. It's nothing. You know, people brag about a Ferrari. I could buy a Ferrari every month if I wanted to. It doesn't matter anymore. But I don't want one. And so when you get out there and you're making that decision. So at this point now, that was the last 8 years you pushed to keep growing. I get that. I'm conservative. I did the same thing. Where are you at right now? And how do you see the future?
Yes. Well, like you, I just upgraded a bunch of my power tools, only I went from 13 to 20. So you got me by 4 inches. So,
okay. Which ones you went to 13 to 20? What was that?
The planer. We got a helical head planer.
Yes.
Got the new 6-inch joiner. And a
helical head on that one, too? Got to have it.
Yep. Oh, it's amazing.
Men, right. If people out there don't know what this stuff means, they're not men yet. You know, they're still boys playing with boys' toys.
Yeah, but it's fine. It makes working with wood so much easier when you have
equipment. And the quality of the product once it's done is just unbelievable. It is easier, too. I built a bridge. I built a giant bridge to go over my pond. If you've been to my house, you know I have a pond. I built a giant bridge to go over that. So it was just super fun to do. So there's your hobbies. Okay, that's your hobby. What's the wife do for hobbies? Anything?
She sews. So in the house, we made one of the bedrooms extra big to fit her sewing stuff. So it serves as a place for the grandkids to sleep and a hobby room for her. And she and I travel a lot. So we, seems like every month. She's in Alaska right now, up there for 2.5 weeks with her brother, kind of visiting. That's where she's from. So she's sending me pictures of bald eagles this morning and these beautiful mountains. So she's out having a great time. We've been to Europe several times. We have exchange kids. One of them was back visiting Melissa a couple weeks ago from Italy. And I told her all about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. She actually downloaded it on a podcast, started listening to it, and her eyes started open like she'd never heard this stuff before. We played the cash flow game, and now she went home to Italy. She got the book for her boyfriend. She bought the book for her brother. They're going to get the game, and it's a whole new world. So now I just got to figure out how can I get you know, somebody from Italy investing. And I know we have members. I know a member personally that's in Australia, and he's doing it. So I know it can be done. I just got to figure out with the CPA how we can get her investing.
So when you say exchange students, you actually exchange your kids for theirs, or you just pick one up?
No, we just pick one up. So they come over here for a year. We host them. You know, we give them a place to live, and they go to high school. So this was 8 years ago for her. And we've kept in touch for the last 8 years. And she's 25 now, working in a job in Italy for Mars Corporation, a candy bar company, right, in sales. And sit over there, so you work and you pay 50% taxes, and then you get a pension when it's all done. And that's life. And unless you understand that there's other things out there you can invest in, you know, they're not taught that in school. She said, you know, no one ever taught me about money until I heard this and how you can create it using real estate or anything else, and, you know, other businesses.
You know, there's got to be rich people in all those countries, though, right? There's got to be somebody who understands it.
People are doing business, but they don't teach you about it in school. They teach you how to be an employee. And that's a worldwide thing. If they need employees, we all need employees, right? Teach you how to get out of this rat race.
Absolutely.
And that's what you do, Dale.
Yeah, that's the only gift that God dropped on me, was the ability to communicate and to take big, complicated issues and break them down into simple ideas that people can follow. And that's the blessing I have to give back, because, you know, it's what was given to me. Whatever they say, you know, what's given to you, you have to give out to everybody else.
Yeah.
Is wasted. You're talking about a foundation here, and I really don't know too much about foundations. You want to tell us what type of a foundation, real quick? What you think it's going to do?
Well, that's the questions. We've got to, you know, pick a topic, pick some organization to do. I know a friend of mine, the lead Shippies, have created a foundation, and I asked him about it this last expo, and he said he said they was worked with their with their bank, and the bank helped them set it up. So that's, you know, something on our radar probably next year, because this year, 2022, is a pretty big year for us. We've got like 10 properties we're selling with huge profits. So we're going to have a massive capital gain, and now we got to do something with it. All right. We'll reinvest a lot of it, but we need to start, you know, giving some of it away. And so that's going to be a project for this year. You know, what are we going to do with this foundation? Who's it going to help? You know, what cause are we interested in? So that's to be determined.
Michael has been with us for 11 years, retired way back in 2016, has continued to grow his portfolio and his wealth and his income. He's got his son in the business now, or actually he's got his son doing his own business and growing and learning how to take over his business at some point. He's really got to the point where he's mastered it. It's just keeps going and is very successful and will continue to grow from there on. I'm not letting him off with the softball questions anymore. I'm asking him the tough questions. These are the ones that society wants answered that we don't want to answer because it's politically incorrect to answer them. But I think in this case, they need to be answered. And where I'm going with this, Michael, is that there's people out there right now that are listening to this show maybe for the first time. The people that listen to it all the time are more like us, but the people who listen for the first time going, you guys are terrible. You're arrogant. You're cocky. You rich people have everything. I'm starving. I can't even pay my bills. I'm this. I'm that. It's terrible. There's no way. You know, you guys have set it all up where we can't win, the whole bit, right? This is the loser limp mentality. It's the whole I need something for nothing. Government needs to take care of me from cradle to grave attitude. Boom. Next part is this. Then there's people that have made it and they're striving to be successful for themselves. Boom. Cut it. You're there. Now, when you're already that successful, why would you think it's necessary to give back. What? Where does that come from, that that's a part of the cycle? I mean, I know it's in my seminar, but before my seminar and even without my seminar, it's there. It's like this universal understanding that if you ever get there, something needs to go back. So where did you pick that up at, and why do you believe in that, and why would you go to the trouble setting up a foundation and really start trying to give back to society? Tell me deeply, why do you love that? Why do you need that? Why does your family need that?
Yeah, so I think, yeah, I was taught that by my father. You know, he's a successful doctor. He also owns some apartments out in Oregon. And he and his wife built a mental health clinic, bolted it on to an existing Boys and Girls Club out in our small town out there. A multi-million dollar mental health clinic was designed to help teens with teen suicide, because that's, you know, it's a nationwide issue. So that was the issue that he was trying to address for the town that we were in. This new building now is named after us, the Johnson Teen Center. And that was his way of giving back. And so that just kind of, you know, gives me a role model to look after. And now that he's gone, you know, I want to continue that. And so I'm going to find, you know, my wife and I will find some way to do that here in our hometown to help out in the society. Because I think that's the responsibility we all have.
Do you feel like people that get to that point in their life, Michael, who are ready to give back, do you feel like they search for something to give back to, or something just pops into their life and that's, there's some gut thing they want to take care of? What do you think? Or is it go both ways?
Yeah, that depends on how your life goes, right? So if something happens to you, somebody close to you passes away with cancer, you know, you might be inclined to focus on that. Or if somebody commits suicide, you focus on that. So things that happen to you that really impact you deeply, you know, eventually they're going to come out that, yeah, maybe I can do something about that.
So you're leaning towards the, it's something that's meaningful to your life, more so than just search out something.
Yeah, because if it hasn't impacted you, you're probably not going to stick with it. So something that's impacted me is what, and my wife, is what we got to figure out. You know, what do we truly care about that we can make a difference in?
All right, so you get to this point, you're going to go through this gyration mentally to figure out what it is that you really feel the world needs help with and you're going to contribute to. How do you divide up your incoming wealth at this point, Michael? I mean, did you just have a set of numbers in your mind, or are you going to shoot from the hip, or how is that going to work?
Yeah, that I don't know yet. What does it take to set up a foundation? Is there a minimum? Is there, you know, there's a lot of questions that we haven't answered yet. And maybe we tack on to someone else's foundation. You know, that's another thing that people have suggested. It's like, why go through the big push up to create your own? And maybe you can just tack on to someone else's. So, you know, that's another possibility. I think a lot of that is a function of how much income do you have coming in. You know, it's like where you're at, you know, multi-millionaire, you know, maybe you want your own foundation. You don't want to tack on to someone else's. But, so we'll see. Ask me again next year.
Well, I want you to tell me when you finally figure it out. Okay. You just got to let me know, because I'm not going to know that you have, but you can tell me.
Oh, yeah.
When you know it, you let me know, because I think it's going to be an interesting thing to communicate about, because there's only, let's say, X thousands of us that have made it to this level at Lifestyles, and we need to communicate together how we keep going from this point forward, because that's how we all got here, is that whatever we learned at the bottom, we shared, and we've all piggybacked on that and, you know, built a mountain together on top of each other. And that's why I think when you're lucky enough to get where you're at, if nothing else, Michael, here's a give back. Give back to people, telling them how you did it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, like you said, you know, leaders go where no one else has gone and send back maps. To your point about, you know, people that, you know, think we're a couple of rich guys just jabbering away here, but, you know, we started off and we weren't rich. You know, there's lots of people that start off single family, and you've given them a map that allows them to get here from there. So you don't have to have a whole lot of money to start this.
Absolutely.
Don't let that stop you.
Well, sir, I appreciate you coming on again and sharing your story. I look forward to sharing with you in the future and meeting you at some of the stuff that's got going this year. And for the rest of you out there, just remember this. It's not the money. It's the lifestyle. And as I go off the air, I'm going to leave you with this statement. If I could do anything, Michael, I would take care of wild animals, pets, dogs and pets. Problem is, every time we pick them up at apartments and spay them and neuter them, bring them home, we can't get rid of them.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.